If you have any interest at all in Etsy, you are going to love this episode with Amy. She started a business on Etsy almost at the very beginning and has since grown it into a self-sustaining empire. In addition to selling on Etsy, she has inked wholesale deals with big department stores and started dropshipping some of her items. I walked away hella inspired by Amy, and I know that you will too.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Fire Drill. We are so thrilled that we have Amy from Paper Finch Design here. Hey Amy, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And Gwen is here too.
Welcome to the show, Amy.
So let's kick it off by having you give everyone a quick, short intro on who you are.
Sure. My name is Amy Braswell, and I'm the owner and founder of Paper Finch Design, which is a lifestyle brand that focuses on travel-inspired and wanderlusty home decor and gift products. I've been doing it about 8 years. I started on Etsy, and I have grown it to have a retail side, a wholesale side, and now I am also teaching and coaching other small business owners.
We are so excited to talk to you because Gwen and I started Etsy shops last year, and a lot of listeners on the show, they also started with us. I would say many of us are still in the beginning phases, so it's really cool to see how you started out and your business has grown into this huge, massive, successful thing. So we're going to definitely get into your personal story as well as the nitty-gritty of like starting a business and scaling. But I do want to start with where this all comes from. Where does your Etsy story start?
When I met my now husband, I was, you know, floating around from job to job. And when we got serious, I decided, okay, I need to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. Long story short, through helping him with his vacation rental business, I was introduced to graphic design, fell in love, and went back to school for a couple years just to learn the basics. And I knew from the beginning I wanted to work for myself from home because I knew one day we would have a family and we love to travel. So from day one, I knew as soon as I graduated, I opened my Etsy shop. It's been a long road. I started out in a totally different space than what I'm in now. It took a good solid 2 or 3 years of kind of figuring out my niche and what was selling and what wasn't. And then kind of once I figured that out, it's when it really started to grow.
Now, I see that it grew to almost 15,000 sales, which is so amazing. Congrats.
Thank you.
How have you pivoted in what products you offer from the beginning to now?
Oh, gosh, I pivoted a lot. Well, let me just start by saying the very first thing I sold, my very first Etsy sale, was a $1 piece of clip art. I thought I wanted to take vintage clip art and like clean it up and color it, you know, if it was black and white, add color, whatnot, and sell it for a dollar. And I thought people are going to come running and it's, you know, you do it once and then you sell it over and over. To be honest, I don't remember exactly when that morphed into selling prints, but that was then where I started actually selling was art prints. And I probably did about 4 years of that kind of changing my style up to be a little more modern where I found my sweet spot. I used to do very, very vintage and textured work. When I look back at my old work and my old logo, it's like, ew. But I think what helped me, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, I think what helped me grow fast was that pretty much everything was customizable. And just to get experience and get reviews and get sales, I was willing to customize pretty much anything. I offered a bazillion colors and I did this, which looking back is not the best thing for growth, but it's good to kind of get started. And then, like I said, I started finding my style a little bit more on my sweet spot. And then honestly, once I started working in the travel and the skylines, which is something that I design, it really kind of took off. Once I realized, okay, am I saturating my customer? Because you know, I have people who buy a skyline print for every city they've lived in. Well, great. Then they can't really come back. So I started having to think about, okay, what else can I offer and what other products and what other designs? So I got started with drop shipping and manufacturing, and now I offer a variety of products.
Yeah, I think that's the case with everybody that gets started on some business or side hustle or even just a blog, you go back and you look at those first efforts and you're just like, oh my God, those are so awful.
Oh, but, absolutely.
The good thing is that everybody settles in and finds their style and gets much better.
Yes. Much, much better for most of us.
How do you know when it's time to pivot? So for example, when we were running the mastermind, maybe 3 weeks in, someone who was there, they haven't had much success with their products that they came out with originally. How do they know whether it's them, like maybe they haven't marketed it yet, or they need to put more effort into getting Etsy promoted listings or organic search traffic? Or how do they know if it's the product and actually they need to be pivoting the product?
Before I get started answering, I will be the first to admit that when I started, Etsy was a different beast. You could play the game and do the treasuries to get more views. And so it was a little bit different on how you could grow your traffic. And it wasn't always the right traffic. It might have just been other Etsy sellers, you know, liking your thing because you liked theirs or whatever. But it was just a little bit more predictable, and they didn't have promoted listings and all that. So it was a little bit more straightforward to get eyes on your products. Then, of course, if they sold, that was up to you. So that being said, I knew it was time for me to pivot. I kind of had two pivots. If we're just focusing on my Etsy shop, I kind of had two big pivots. One was when I pivoted into the travel and wanderlust niche. And that's because I noticed I was selling the same product over and over and over again. And the things that I weren't selling, I used to offer nursery decor, all kinds of stuff. Just I had no like real topic. I just sold prints. And just kind of as I got a little bit more established in business, as I started looking at other more successful shops around me, I noticed that they were all a little bit more cohesive. That was just my issue. That's not going to be everybody's. But I stopped and looked and noticed, okay, my skylines, and I have this one design that still sells well today where I customize your, like if someone moves from state to state to state, I kind of depict that in a graphic. And I noticed those two things were selling over and over and over. So I started adding more and more cities. And once those outsold my old designs that had been, you know, in the brand new cities were even selling better than my old nursery decor or whatever, I realized, okay, this can be my thing, is to be known for travel and wanderlusty stuff, which perfectly suits me because we travel all the time. 2 years ago, we just up and moved to Florida because we wanted to live by the beach. Like we are all about living life and making it an adventure. So it really, once I settled into that niche, it felt like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I feel like your customers can feel that when you're passionate about what you're selling and not just creating things to keep up with the trends or to mimic another shop. And then I kind of already covered my pivot to offering other products. I realized that, I mean, I had customers say to me, I'd love to keep buying from you, but I'm running out of wall space. So I thought, oh, okay. Let's see what else I can do. And I looked into other products.
So with the prints, are you doing digital downloads where they actually download the PDF and print at home, or are you printing it for them and shipping?
I am not offering digital downloads. I did briefly. I offered my kind of retired designs. I chose to never offer my skylines as downloads because they are kind of my bread and butter, I guess. But honestly, I just, at the time, it was just me, and I couldn't keep up with two shops and growing my wholesale, so I let that go.
Got it.
But I know some people who do very, very well with digital downloads.
I think it's really important what you just said is that you listened and observed the feedback from your customers. You noticed that there were things that were selling better and things that weren't selling. And you had people asking you for things and you responded. And I feel like that's pretty key to running a successful business of any kind.
Absolutely. I mean, I forget the exact quote, but don't they say that 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers or something like that, that your best customer is your returning customer because you've already proven yourself to be trustworthy and they already know you and are comfortable. So I, from the beginning, kind of prided myself in customer service. And I think that also helped to bring customers back again and again.
I believe it. So when you're talking about communication with your customer, you're talking about looking at what they purchase, but also are you thinking messages that they send you or questions that they have that go into the conversation section of Etsy?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, both. you know, I look at what they are buying, and that is usually pretty obvious. But then I'd notice, okay, if someone said, hey, can you add a quote on this? I'd go, oh, you know what? I can add some custom text. And so then I did a listing for, like, you know, add custom text to your print. Or if someone said, hey, I really love this quote, can you design something? And if it was in my wheelhouse and on brand, and luckily they would usually trust me, you know, to come up with my style, then I'd have another product for my shop. And I would, you know, then put it on a print or a pillow or a mug or whatever. But, or if somebody seemed to be asking for, can I get this in green? Then I notice, oh, wait, I don't have a lot of green in my shop. Things like that. They might sound like little asks, but there's a reason they're asking. You're not making it obvious that you have what they're looking for, and you might have it. But then it would, if nothing else, make me realize, oh, I need to make this more clear that you can customize this. I need to make this more clear that, yes, you can move the heart to wherever you want, whatever city you want.
I love that. I think this is an element of the shop that I need to work on. So I have a bachelorette party shop, and I sell printable scavenger hunts and games for that. And sometimes people will message me and say, does this come in pink? And that gives me something to think about, like, oh, maybe, you know, people want it in pink. But then other times I'll get these messages from these brides, like, hey, I just purchased this. Can you email it out to all the bridesmaids? I don't want them to, like, know it was from me, or it's like crazy bride messages. And it gets me thinking, why did I choose this niche? People are very, like, a certain way about their wedding. But yes. The weddings are a good niche on Etsy. So it's been, like, somewhat successful. So it's exciting to see it grow.
Weddings are, you have to balance, like, okay, they're a pain because people are crazy about their weddings, but they're a good moneymaker. You can charge more if you put the word wedding on something, or bachelorette or bridesmaid. You can charge a little more, but you're having to put up with crazy brides. I chose not to go down that path. I used to do wedding invitations here and there, but I just know me and how I can get kind of frazzled. I deal with anxiety as well. And I decided for me, it was not worth it, even though to this date, my single best sale was a wedding invitation set. I just said, oh, that's not for me, but it can be very, very lucrative. And I love that idea of the download scavenger hunts.
It is really great.
I want one for not bachelorette. I'm already married. I want one just for me.
Every time I get a sale, it makes me so happy because I didn't do anything. But I must say that my sister went to a bachelorette party and she brought the printable games that I had. And then some of her friends also brought things to the party, and everything that was a printed version, not a printed home version, just looked better. Like when you're printing something out on a white piece of paper, it just doesn't look that great. So I'm curious how, and you could probably charge more when it's a print too. How do you go about making high quality prints? Like, do you have a special printer that you had to purchase? Do you buy certain paper? How expensive was it to get started with that?
Yes, and very. Yes, I have a special printer. I have an archival quality inkjet printer here in my office. And fancy. It's big. I still do all of my art prints myself. I outsource, drop ship, whatever, everything else. But I still do all my art prints for now. I just am kind of a control freak over those. And then I buy fine art paper as well. So my prints are guaranteed not to fade for 100 years, which most of us aren't going to have wall art hanging up for 100 years, but still. I'll be honest, it's like over $1,000 printer. So I did not go down that route until I was a few years in and was doing well. What I used to do is outsource to a local print shop. So I still would go pick them up and, you know, put eyes on them and make sure they looked good. But I kind of realized that it wasn't working for me. So for this particular print shop and most print shops, if you order one, let's say one 8x10, it costs, you know, X amount of money. Well, it costs the same to order six of them. So every time I got an order, I would order like six of the 8x10 and just hope I sold it again. Well, I wasn't the smartest about it. I think I mentioned before, I offered so many choices and colors and sizes that I ended up with a full room of prints that just weren't selling, and running back and forth to the print shop. And like I said, I pride myself on my customer service and I'm a people pleaser. So if I had people saying, I really need it shipped tomorrow, I'd be like, okay. And I'd drive to the print shop, and I found myself just constantly driving back and forth and with all this extra inventory, and I wasn't making smart decisions. So I sat down and I did the math, and I luckily was at a volume enough at that point that it was cheaper for me to get that expensive printer and print it myself, because the costs are just so much lower per print once you make that initial investment.
I'd love to hear about how you shopped and selected a printer. The reason I'm asking is that I also sell temporary tattoos for bachelorette parties. And if I used my own printer, I could do more customizable stuff. Like, apparently right now it's really popular to get your fiance's face in temporary tattoos, and then all the girls at the bachelorette wear your fiance's face on them, which is so weird.
But that's so weird.
People ask for that, or like names or something, but I have to commit up front with the manufacturer like what I want to do. So I was looking into printers, but one, like, printers seem really expensive, and then you don't just necessarily go on Amazon and like buy a printer. How did you make the purchase? Did you get advice from anyone? Did you get like a supplier deal? Any tips that anyone who's looking to buy a printer should know?
I went on the Etsy forums and I dug around and I read what people liked and didn't like about their printers. And then I kind of coupled that with other online research, and I had it pretty much narrowed down to an Epson or a Canon, I think it was. Clearly I went with the Epson, since I can't even remember what the other one was. And just kind of cost compared the prices, the price of ink. I did not get a supplier deal, but I did make sure to get the warranty. And I will say I'm very glad I did, because I've had to, I think I'm on my third printer now. Not because, well, one did kind of break, but I just run them down because I use them so much that I actually had to call in my warranty two different times now. And so I just got a free printer, or not a free one, but they replaced it for free. So that's one little tip, is I would look for a warranty, whether it's a little bit extra or whether it comes with it. And just think about what you're really going to do with it. There are all different levels. I decided I didn't need to print any bigger than 11 by 14 in my own home. That was a deciding factor. I knew I used a lot of color in my work, so I ended up with the Epson SureColor because it's marketed towards digital artists and photographers. If you're only doing like, you know, black and white or a little color, that's different. And then, I mean, I did upgrade. I started with a slightly smaller one and just upgraded as I saw fit. I upgraded to one that has like bigger ink cartridges because it's cheaper. So you can kind of ease in. You don't have to go crazy right off the bat. You know, you don't have to go for the $1,000 printer that's got that fine art feed and the roll feed and all this stuff if you're not sure you're going to use it. As long as, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. It's such an interesting question that I like talking about, but I've never really talked about it with anyone but my husband while we were buying my printer. I think that if you think it'll pay for itself in the, you know, first like 6 months to a year, get it, because you're going to grow and you can always upgrade. But as long as it works for you then, and you can kind of work it into your budget. I guess what I'm saying is, if you buy a nice printer, don't feel like you're married to it forever. You can always upgrade if things go well. Don't overextend yourself.
How do you estimate the cost of the ink? And then how do you price the product to make up for all these extra costs?
It took a lot of Googling. I finally found, and I will shout them out because I love them, Red River Paper. They had an article talking about, so they sell substrates, which are papers and greeting card, whatnot. They had an article talking, breaking down each major printer and talking about the estimate. And it's all an estimate because they don't know what colors you're using and all that, about how much each size print cost. You know, like the printer I use now, the cartridges are about $50 and there's seven of them. So it's expensive at first, but they last a long time. So it was a little bit of upfront research, and then it was a little bit of just kind of try and see how long it lasts for me. I started with the smaller printer with the smaller cartridges, and then once I realized, okay, I'm kind of selling a lot, then I upgraded, and the upfront cost of the bigger cartridges paid off in the end because you save on shipping and you get a little bit more ink per penny. But I just did a lot of online research, and the world of ink is kind of not sketchy, that's not the right word. It's vague, because it's hard to quote if you're doing a black and white photo versus, you know, me who has every color in the rainbow in some of my prints, it's going to use different inks. And then over time, you learn which inks you need to buy more of and which you don't. I know that if my, you know, Photo Black gets low, I can ignore it because I rarely use Photo Black. And it's kind of just a combination of do your research and then figure out what works for you, which I know is not the most helpful answer.
No, but thank you. Is there a website or anything that's like a printer website that only people would know about?
I mean, there's a lot of them. What I did was I decided on the brand I wanted, and then I went to their website. They usually have the best deals. That being said, once you get to ink and paper, you don't have to buy from them. They'll try and say it like, you need Epson ink and Epson paper. And for example, I do need Epson ink, but I can buy it on Amazon through a distributor for a little cheaper. But the actual printer, I would say decide what you want and then buy it from that manufacturer's website. So you get the support and you get the, because they are not easy to figure out. I mean, I did a lot of reading tutorials and whatnot to figure out about color profiles and what to do in this situation. And what does it mean to clean your print heads? And I mean, it's still a work in progress. I spent Monday an hour trying to fix an issue with something that I had never dealt with before on my printer. But if you buy directly from the manufacturer, you usually get the support with it. And then like I mentioned, Red River Paper had an article on ink, even though they sell paper. So you just never know where you're going to find little nuggets. But when you find them, bookmark them so you can find them again, because you're going to come across a lot of junk websites too, where people claim to know, you know, the exact penny that ink costs or the best paper, and which it might be for someone. But if you find something that resonates with you, how it's written, what it's addressing, just bookmark it.
Are you printing everything yourself? I know that you also sell bags and coffee mugs and things. I'm assuming you're drop shipping those.
I am drop shipping those, yes.
Okay. We also tried to do drop shipping, but that proved to be more difficult in terms of like the pricing and figuring out a good drop shipper. Do you use one of the big ones like Printful, or do you go with like a local manufacturer?
I do a combination of both. I started out with the big ones like Printful and Printed Mint. As I grew and as I, you know, crunched the numbers, for example, like I sell pillows and they sell well, but Printful and Printed Mint don't have a good markup. Like they're too expensive. They're pillows. So I had to go find a more like, you know, smaller shop. And some of my dropship, like manufacturing companies, you have to have a resale license and you have to be approved. So you have to have a little bit of volume. Or some of them you don't. You just have to prove that you are a business that will be reselling it and for tax purposes. So that's kind of a always changing thing, who I use and what I offer, you know, what I get through who. It's constantly changing. I'm always researching new manufacturers, new vendors. I have some mugs right now in Home Goods, and I could not use my normal drop shipper for that because it would be crazy expensive. So I had to find a new one that would do an order of several thousand mugs, and I had them shipped to my house, you know? So it's just a constant game of figuring out what's the best for each unique situation. But when you're just getting into it, I do really recommend the big ones, because then you don't have to worry about the process or the quality. They've already proven themselves. You can use it to kind of experiment on what sells and what doesn't. And if something takes off, then you can start looking around for a better markup. And the beauty is you've already been selling, you know, say you're selling a mug for $15, $16, you're already selling it at that. So if you find a better price on your end, it just means more profit. You don't have to lower that price because you're already proving that it sells at that price, if that makes sense.
That definitely does make sense. I've found that it's really hard to profit off of the mugs. Are you seeing something different? And I guess, who do you use? Who do you recommend for the drop shipping?
I mean, my favorite hands down is Printed Mint. They won me over from the beginning. I was not one of their first customers, but I came on kind of early before they exploded, and their customer service is just amazing. And I love their branding choices. It's just those little things. I mean, their quality and their pricing is about the same as a lot of the other ones, but it's just that extra little touch. You're right. The mug, you don't make a ton of profit on mugs. Some products, I just kind of tell myself, all right, these are brand awareness. You know, as long as I'm making a teensy bit, like I will be upfront. The markup I make on a mug is nothing. And the markup I make on a print is crazy good. So I figure they kind of balance each other out, and it's brand awareness And I'm kind of growing my brand to get to the point where I can then switch over to my other manufacturer and say, okay, I need 144 of this mug. And then I can, you know, I've got that goal in mind that one day I'm going to have either, you know, a fulfillment center or a warehouse or something, because that's just kind of where you have to go. You can only grow to a certain point using drop shipping, yes, because of the markup. And if that's where you want to be for the flexibility, that's great. But if you want to grow beyond that, then yes, you have to start looking around for manufacturers with slightly better markups.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of Printed Mint before, so I'll have to check that out. That's a new one.
Wonderful. And I love, they provide a lot of styled mock-ups too. They work with, they partner with, I never know how to pronounce it, Hotstock? H-A-U-T-E. The photographer's name is Rachel, and I love her stock photo site as well. She does a lot of product mock-ups, and she recently partnered with Printed Mint, and so they offer some beautiful styled mock-ups for a lot of their products.
Oh, do you use their mock-ups? That's a hard thing too, figuring out what to put in the actual listing pictures.
Oh yeah, I totally use mock-ups. I am not a photographer. I am not good at it as hard as I try. I either use mock-ups or if I'm lucky enough to get, you know, I've sent photographers products for trade photos, or I'm part of a creative community here in St. Petersburg and she always has a photographer at her events. So I will donate a print and then she'll take a picture of it and I'll know, ooh, I'm going to get a free photo of this print. But 99% of my stuff is mock-ups.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
How many listing pictures do you typically put?
Well, it's funny. When I first started, Etsy only gave you like 5 maybe. So my old listings maybe have 3 to 5, more like 3. And I just haven't had the time to go back and fluff them up. But my newer listings, I do try to use all 10. I, at this point, have collected a mass of like mug mock-ups and print framed mock-ups and this and that. Certain products, my pouches, it's like 2 because I just, those mock-ups are hard to find, hard to use. And like I said, I have so many products too. There's no way I could produce everything and take photos of it because I would go broke.
Got it. Yeah, I'm looking at one of yours now and it seems that you include a picture of a coupon in the listing pictures so they could apply it to the purchase that day.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
And my email signups have really done well since I started including that.
So let's talk about the point where you were kind of an Etsy seller taking orders and then you took that first step to scale and become bigger. So I know you sell a lot like through wholesale and off Etsy. How did that process look like?
Oh gosh, again, it was kind of fluid. I would hire someone and then it wouldn't work out. So then it'd be me again for a while. So I'm kind of reaching back into my brain to see. I think the first time I hired someone, it was to help with packaging at Christmas time because it was just so insane. Then my big like aha moment for really growing and doing wholesale and trade shows and whatnot. So I went to a conference in spring of 2016. At the time, it was called Stationery Academy. They've since rebranded to be Society for Creative Founders. And they did workshops on wholesale and branding and social media. And it was amazing. I mean, it was game changing for my business. And it just gave me the confidence, like, okay, I'm ready. Val with Lily and Val, which is a big gift product brand. She was there as a speaker and I chatted with her. I booked a one-on-one and picked her brain, asked her questions about getting into wholesaling and whatnot. And I had done a couple little ones by then, but from people who would approach me on Etsy, but I mean, very, very small. And I didn't have a catalog. I didn't have a line sheet, any of that. So I went home and I actually hired another designer to do a catalog because as much as I could design it, I knew it would take me forever. That's what she did for a living. So I hired her to do a catalog and I just started pitching stores. Also, Etsy Wholesale was around at the time. So that was kind of a nice way for buyers to find me. And I just started small. And I still have one shop here locally that I will ask her, okay, how do you think I should do this? Because luckily we're friendly. And I'll say, should I call or should I email people? You know, cold call, cold email? Like, am I offering too many choices? So to dial all that down, I think two of the best things I did were find a mentor who had been there and ask questions. And then to just don't be scared to ask your retailers what's working, what's not. And I know that didn't completely answer your question. I kind of went off on a side note, but
no, this is great.
I like to do that.
Can you tell us what are the conferences that Etsy people go to so you could find these mentors?
Yeah. So Society for Creative Founders still does one a year. I think they switched to fall and it's always in Pensacola. That one's amazing. That's the kind where you actually, you know, you all stay in the same, they rent out a house and you're all staying in that house, eating every meal together, doing workshops. I can't recommend it enough. I know that a lot of sellers go to Inspired, which I haven't been to, but I've heard it's magical. Alt Conference, Indie, what is it called? Indie Pop, I think. It's in New Orleans. There are so many out there. And then if you look around, there's probably a lot of ones local too. That might be like a day workshop. I'm going to one in 2 weeks. It's here in Tampa, but it's just during the day. You go, if you're out of town, you stay in a hotel, of course, but there's no organized, you know, block of hotel rooms or a house to rent. But if you're local, you just go for the day and then you go home. Or don't be afraid. I mean, going back actually to the printer question, I reached out to a couple high volume Etsy sellers and asked them. I said, hey, you know, I'm not trying to like compete with you. I made sure our styles were different. Do you print, you know, I made sure they said like all prints on a archival quality printer, blah, blah, blah. And I'd say, do you have your own printer? What do you think about it? So just don't be afraid to ask. I think people in general, product-based people are a tight-lipped group, but you keep asking and you'll find someone who's willing to, you know, share. And maybe not their how they do this, but they might say, oh yeah, I'll talk to you about my printer. Or, oh yeah, I'll talk to you about how to move into wholesale. And I think it does help if you're like your brand complements theirs, but doesn't compete. I was comfortable asking Val with Lily and Val because she does a lot of the same products, but her style is very different than mine.
That definitely makes sense. Yeah, I've noticed on a lot of podcasts, people don't share what products they make, which is always interesting to me, but I understand where they're coming from. So regarding how you're actually making the prints, we toyed around with InDesign, with Adobe Photoshop, Canva. I think in the mastermind, we use literally every program. Illustrator, there wasn't one that was the clear winner. Is there one in your mind that's just better than the rest and you would recommend them?
I mean, for what I do, yes. I mean, I definitely recommend the Adobe Creative Suite for sure, because you get all of them. And I use, well, not all of them, but I use InDesign, Photoshop, Illustrator. I mean, I use Illustrator and Photoshop every day. And I use InDesign when I'm designing like marketing collateral. But I would say I spend 95% of my time in Illustrator, but that's just because that's what I do. I work in with graphics and I work with, you know, digital design. But unless you're a photographer, I recommend getting the whole suite. If you're a photographer, I know they have a photographer package that's just Photoshop and Lightroom, and that's probably enough because you can do whatever graphics you need to probably in Canva. I never go on Canva because I have Illustrator and I feel comfortable in it. But I think from what I have seen and from what I hear, you can do a lot in Canva. But I would say, like, unless you're a photographer, then it's worth it to me to get the whole creative suite, because then you get all kinds of other stuff that just helps support that, like Adobe Spark and the type kit. And you just, there's so many little tiny things that Adobe's always offering. There's, I forget what it's called, where you can build your own web page really quickly, or little landing page. So I recommend the Adobe Creative Suite for sure.
And it's not that expensive. I think you can do the annual subscription or you can pay monthly. I believe maybe I got it for $15 a month and access to all the tools. So I don't think it was that, I could be wrong, but I don't think it was that expensive. Although, you know, you can do the 30-day free trial when you're starting out and see if it's for you or not.
Yes. And what you also can do is when they launch a sale, like I did this recently, I think I was at, I'd been with them a while. And so it had crept up to $50 a month, I think. And they did a Black Friday sale for $29.99 a month. And I just wrote them and said, hey, can I take advantage of this for the next year? And they said, okay. So I saved myself $20 a month.
Okay, I definitely didn't get them for $15 a month, then. I have no idea. But I bought
it
a year ago.
They do a lot of, like, if you are a student or a teacher, you get a big discount. Or if you're a new member, sometimes they give crazy cheap discounts. So, I mean, it's definitely possible. But once you've been around for a while and they've got you hooked, they start.
Right, bumping it
and
up.
And like I said, I mean, I have all the applications because I use all of them a little bit here and there.
So when you're saying, to go back to the wholesaling, you're going around and you have a catalog, like you made a catalog of your stuff. How did you make that? Mm-hmm. And then do you go and just say like, here, this is what I can offer you. How does that conversation even go?
Well, I've been told over and over to not just stop by shops. They don't really like it. If it's local and I do want to swing by, I just make it short and sweet. Here, I want to drop this off. I know you're busy. And I'll follow up with a phone call next week or whatever. But, you know, I can't fly to Topeka to pitch a store. So I email. So I have a digital version of all of my collateral and I have a printed version. And sometimes if I really like a store, I'll send out a pitch packet with like a sample and maybe a little koozie or something to sweeten the pot. But my catalog, I actually had another designer do because I wasn't entirely, well, number one, I was busy and that's not my wheelhouse.
How did you find that designer to make your catalog?
So I found that designer on Upwork, which I do really like Upwork. It's a freelancer site. And it's nice because you pay Upwork and Upwork pays the freelancer. So you're protected. I found her on that and I use her every year to do my catalog. I just once a year pop up and say, hey, I'm back. Can you do this year's? So yeah, I love Upwork because it's like you're outsourcing. But again, I'm using her once a year. That's it. And then I did all the other collateral myself. I just did a lot of research. Or you can find templates for a lot of things like a pricing guide or a purchase order. All the kind of boring, not so pretty stuff.
When you were thinking of the pricing guide, did you have to give people ideas of like, here are things that people normally do? Like our normal first order is 50 of these mugs and 20 of these pillows, and that's what we recommend. Did you have to come up with that?
I did eventually. In the beginning, I didn't. I just came up with my minimum and my reorder and my pricing. And then I let people kind of decide what they wanted. But it's not a bad idea to do a starter pack. They sell really well because you're taking the guesswork out of it for buyers. You're saying, this sells well. Here's how many I think you need to, you know, complement. And I will say, I just thought of this. When I started, I had been in wholesale a little bit, but when I knew I wanted to grow, I hired a wholesale coach for a little bit. Her name's Caroline Keating, and she's awesome. And she kind of helped talk me through a little bit of it. She used to be a high volume buyer for different department stores. So she's been on the other end and she was great. And I totally feel bad I didn't mention her earlier.
Did you start out with locally owned gift type shops or did you go straight to the home goods and the big department stores?
Oh gosh, no. I started out local, small, not even local actually. I think my first wholesale account was not local, but small. I mean, we're talking like, you know, $100 minimum orders. And I'm trying to remember what my very, very first wholesale order was. I'm pretty sure it came through Etsy because buyers actually are on Etsy and they're looking around. I mean, I just had one this week, someone saying, hey, do you offer wholesale? So, you know, I suggest if you do, put it in your description, put it somewhere, say wholesale orders accepted or wholesale available. And then I didn't get to like home goods level until I went to a trade show last year, which it happens that big buyers like that can find you without going to trade shows, but it definitely helps get you in front of them because you've got your booth and, you know, Target's walking around and Hallmark's walking around and Anthropologie's walking around. And that is how I connected with home goods.
So in terms of financially, how much more money you can make when you wholesale versus an Etsy seller, can you give anyone an idea of, you know, why it's a good idea to go this route and to really scale up?
Well, it's a funny thing. It kind of depends, again, on the product. For example, my mugs, I'll say, I make a lot more by wholesaling a certain order. It's all such a numbers game. And one thing I do like that Caroline Keating did, my wholesale coach, was she provided like a little spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet where you could work out your cost. Like, okay, if I sell a single, this is how much it costs me. But if I sell 25, this is how much it costs me and how much my profit is. So you kind of figured out your price breaks. And what I mean by that are like, someone can buy 5 pillows from me at this price. But if they buy 25, of course, I'm going to give them a better price. Because I get a better price on it, it entices them to buy more, and then I make a better markup. So if someone buys like, so example, like for my mugs are always the bane of product people's existence because they are heavy, but yet people want to buy them really cheap. You know, I don't make a whole lot of profit on selling my minimum, but I'm hoping that their customers love it so much that they come back and order twice as many or three times as many. And then I am making a good markup because then I can reach out to my printer and say, okay, what deal can you give me for, you know, 24 mugs instead of two? And that's kind of how it all works. So you, in the beginning, I was taking a bit of a risk with some of my products, not all of them. Paper products, I actually make more on retail than wholesale. But you have to look at it as if you want to move into wholesale, okay, yes, you're making a little less per product, most likely, but you're only dealing with like that one, you just have to nurture that one relationship. And you might be packaging and shipping that one day instead of all day long doing one-offs for, you know, $5, $10. So I really do urge people to think strongly about what they want their day and their business to look like. Wholesale is not easy by any means. Buyers are smart and they're not always just going to be like, oh my gosh, I love it all. They might say, hey, your mug broke on the way to me. What are you going to do about it? I'm so mad, you know, or this stuff is just not selling. Will you take it back? And then you have to have some difficult conversations. So it's, you kind of have to figure out, okay, where are you at in your business? Where are you at in your personal life? And it also depends on individual products, I'm sure. I can only speak to what I sell, but I obviously, handmade crochet hats are not going to scale in the same way my stuff does. I designed something once, I can print it 1,000 times, but I can't, you know, you can't do that with handmade crochet hats. So, you know, I think there are a lot of rules that do kind of apply to all businesses, but then there are a lot that are really, really unique to your situation and your product, especially in, you know, the handmade crafty Etsy world.
So thank you for giving us so much to think about. I think a lot of us are interested in Etsy as a passive income source for a lifestyle play. But if you want to go big, then this is definitely a more involved thing. Amy, thank you so much. You've given us so much information today. We do want to ask you the final two that we ask everyone at the end of the podcast. The first thing, if people want to learn more about you or connect with you after this, where can they find you?
You can find me a lot of places. So my site is paperfinch.com. And of course, I'm on Etsy, but as Paperfinch Design is my shop name. I'm on Instagram and Facebook as Paperfinch Design. And then I am getting ready in February to launch a new course. It'll be called Weatherproof Your Business. And it's all about setting up your business to run without you if any kind of stormy weather hits in your life, or if you just want to take a vacation. So I will be launching my own personal branded website where I can house that course and offer one-on-one coaching and start kind of teaching and helping other women entrepreneurs feel a little bit more confident and stable in their business.
I love that because I know so many of us, life just happens and we need to set up a business that will run without us physically having to be in it every day. So we will definitely share the link to that course when it comes out. Please let us know with our listeners.
Okay.
The last question, what is your wildest dream?
My wildest dream, I think, is to get, oh God, I mean, to pet a baby tiger. But if we're talking about business related, I think it's to get to the point where I am partnering with brands like Travel and Leisure or Fodors. And I'm somehow, I don't know what this looks like yet, getting paid to travel.
I love that.
I love the whole baby tiger thing. Yeah, you can actually pet them in petting zoos.
What petting zoos do you go to?
There's one in like Ohio that's like a big cat reserve or something like that. And they have tigers that you can pet. I know there's one for sure in Idaho.
Aren't you not supposed to be petting wild animals though? But that could be a whole nother podcast.
But they're probably not wild if they're, you know, raised in captivity.
That's very true. That's very true. All right. Well, Amy, thank you so much. We appreciate it. This has been phenomenal. And we hope that inspires others to grow their business.
Well, and if anyone ever has any questions or whatnot, I'm always available at amy@paperfinch.com. I think it's silly when product people are so tight-lipped. So shy of here's how I draw my skylines, I'm usually pretty open about everything.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, You have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.